Hi there, I'm Lewis Foster from the Manx Radio Newsroom. Thank you for choosing this edition of Newscast. A campaign group is warning that the opportunity for better dyslexia support on the island could be lost. A Tynwald Select Committee has been exploring the provision available on the Isle of Man. However, of the 12 recommendations put forward in its final report, the Council of Ministers has accepted just two as written. The report and the Council of Ministers' response will go before Tynwald next week. Ahead of that debate, I've been speaking to Julia Bell, Peter Washington and Chrissy Watson from the dyslexia advocacy group IOM.
I'm Chrissy Watson and I've spent a lifetime in education specifically to do with specific learning difficulties, and I'm also a qualified assessment practitioner.
Peter Washington, I'm a local Douglas councillor, but I've had an interest in dyslexia with my children going through the education system. I'm dyslexic and I've been at this since about 2012.
And my name's Julia Bell and I have two children. One we know for sure has dyslexia and other neurodivergent conditions. And my youngest, I'm convinced he's also dyslexic, but without formal diagnosis.
We'll get into it. First of all, Julia, thank you for getting in touch with us in respect of the Council of Ministers' response to the Select Committee's final report. And the one word you used to describe this response is disappointing. So, first of all, just tell us why.
Yeah, so obviously we're really thankful for what Tynwald did in terms of producing that report, and they came up with 12 recommendations that would make a real impact, a positive impact for the community, all children, especially children with dyslexia and other learning difficulties. But we're disappointed because only two were accepted. The most important one, in my opinion, was rejected, and there were nine amendments that were made. And the two that were accepted, you know, one of them was on the premise that it's already being done. And the one that was then accepted, we felt that they couldn't not accept it because they're probably obliged to by law from the Equality Act to do that, because it was about making a framework to evidence that they are adhering to the Equality Act.
I think as well, we've got to recognise that this select committee has been spent 18 months collecting all this evidence, and they went into a great deal of details, and these people really got to the nuts and bolts of what's going on. And we've got many families have been raising concerns for many years about this, and this is what we thought was our one opportunity to really make a difference in education in an area that's been going wrong for a lot of years. And as we can see, like with the 12 recommendations, two accepted, one rejected and nine amended, we don't think that is, you know, we've every reason to be disappointed.
Looking at some of the responses that have been put in there, Education Minister Daphne Kane, she's highlighted in her foreword that it's just a change of date. But why does that matter then? If it's the same recommendation just 1 year later, what's the issue there?
Well, we know that change is slow anyway. And if we're changing the date, we're just making it slower. But I actually, for me, it's not necessarily the date change that's disappointing, because if you look carefully at the wording, one or two, even if you change one or two pieces of word or structure of the sentence, it can change the whole meaning of the amendment. So, for example, there's one recommendation that says that the Tynwald suggested that training in dyslexia and other learning difficulties needs to be mandatory for teachers and the workforce. But the wording was changed in the amendment to say we just need to have access to CBT, access to professional development. So that wording alone completely changes the meaning, because we can have access to training, but that doesn't mean that teachers are going to be given the protected time to actually engage in that CPD.
I think one of the things that we, putting it in a nutshell, when you get a timetable and they start extending it and they start moving it further and further away, literally, we all know what's happening. They're kicking the can down the road. And it's as simple as that, and that's how we would view it. They've altered the words. They've altered some of the nitty gritty, the nuances in there, and effectively they're just going to get this through and said, "Oh, we're going to promise that this is all going to happen," but we know they're just going to push the can down the road, basically.
And I think the most one of the important points as well is that there's a wording in it that says "continued," that teachers are going to continue to get access to training, which suggests actually no change at all. And if you look at, I can't remember the year it was done, it was perhaps 2020, maybe 2021, there was a public consultation that went out and it asked staff and parents their views on whether they had sufficient training. And I'm quoting this verbatim. It says, a majority of parents felt that teaching staff lack knowledge in literacy difficulties and dyslexia. And that the majority, 65% of staff, have not received training in the last 5 years, with 10% not receiving any literacy training since their teacher training. And 61% of teachers are not confident in identifying dyslexia, and teaching staff also reported low levels of confidence when sharing literacy concerns with parents and carers. So it proves that if we don't change this, the same data is just going to happen year after year. Something needs to change in order to get a different result, and that is mandatory training.
So the essence of this report that's come out, what we're asking for, we want things to be implemented. We've not just got a publication or a report that's going to Tynwald. We don't want pieces of paper going to Tynwald. We want actions.
Yeah.
And that's what we want for our children. We want outcomes.
Yeah.
We don't want this paper exercise. And like I've said before, the Select Committee have worked so hard for so long and to come up with such a concise response. And I think it's quite disrespectful to the way that this has been handled.
When you look at that amendment which says to continue, like you mentioned there, Your initial instinct, and certainly when I read it, I thought, well, does that mean that the Select Committee hadn't done its research and they're recommending something that was already in place? But like you're saying, it's not the case at all, and this wording is a bit misleading, would you say?
Yeah, it's absolutely misleading because we know from the evidence that the Tynwald report is based on evidence that took 18 months to collect. And we also, and for me, that report was really validating. It demonstrated that the concerns I have are real. They match my own personal experiences of education supporting my children and that of others as well. And not only that, it also validated the public consultations that were done, perhaps in 2020, that kind of time as well. So we need to make sure that this isn't just another report, another paper exercise. We need to make sure that action comes from this.
Mm-hmm. And the department doesn't like the term, or seemingly doesn't like the term dyslexia. They prefer literacy difficulties. Bill Henderson, who was retiring MHK when Tynwald decided to set up a select committee, stood on the floor and said, I'm dyslexic and I prefer to be known as dyslexic. I don't want to be known necessarily as somebody just with literacy difficulties. And it comes back to, it's up to the individual to decide if they want to use that label or not, not to the Department of Education. Yeah. And literacy difficulties covers a whole number of difficulties. So it could be a child who's moved schools many times or has English as a second language or doesn't have access to books at home or has medical conditions. Lots of things can cause literacy difficulties, but the things that cause dyslexia are specific, and the type of instruction that teaching a dyslexic child needs is quite different. And it needs to have lots of repetition, a good phonic base, lots of different things. And say you get all the children that you're teaching with literacy difficulties, including dyslexics, to a certain level. The dyslexic child may still have trouble copying from the board because that's specifically a problem with the dyslexics find. So I have an issue with the literacy difficulty label rather than just saying it's dyslexic. And this is the most current definition, which came out in the UK last year, the Delphi definition. And they're saying there isn't a good definition. Well,
Yeah.
The important point that you've got to recognise as well is that if we don't have these children and they don't know they're dyslexic, if nobody's going to tell them, it's going to cause mind games with them, and it can affect their mental health in lots of other different ways. The other thing that we've got to remember, this is a small island that we're on. There's a big wide world out there, and in that big wide world, some of these big companies and even smaller companies are looking for neurodiverse, and dyslexia in some areas, in some jobs, they are definitely looking for. Now, if we don't say that some of our kids who are dyslexic, even now on the Isle of Man, Department of Home Affairs has a dyslexia recruitment process so that people with dyslexia, because they want those people with neurodiversity to be in Department of Home Affairs. But if we don't tell them at school that they're dyslexic, when they leave school, they're not going to be able to go for those jobs, and they're not going to get that look at those careers because somebody, the Department of Education, doesn't like using the word dyslexia and doesn't agree with it. And it's, we've got to catch up with the rest of the world. We're going to get left behind. And our education for our kids is the most important thing that we can do. They're our future. Yeah.
How far behind would you say we are compared to the UK, for example, in terms of education? Chrissy, we can hear obviously your background that you've talked about. Perhaps you can give us some kind of gauge.
It's behind in every sense because we don't have the trained SENCOs, and we don't have dyslexia specialists that I know of. You know, whose job is to support the teachers in the various schools and to help them with identification, or maybe in some interventions that might be useful with that specialist knowledge. But it goes beyond that. If a student wants to go to university, who's dyslexic, they can apply for something called the Disabled Students Allowance, which will help them with some of the additional costs not incurred by other students. And they need something called a diagnostic assessment report, which diagnoses them as dyslexic. So you ignore the term dyslexic all the way through school, but when you want to go to university, it suddenly appears again. And with the Equalities Act, dyslexics have to be acknowledged and supported to even in the workplace. So I don't understand how you could ignore the name. And in the UK, of course, they do have, you know, laws to support people in the workplace as well. So to me, it's just a bit strange. And the other thing we have to consider is that where do dyslexic people go who leave school with low self-esteem and maybe poor motivation because they haven't been looked after? Whereas you look at somebody like Dame Adriana Pocock, who's our top space scientist, or Jamie Oliver, who have been supported, and you can see that people can achieve a lot. So why aren't we doing this for our children?
Yeah, I think the stance of the Department of Education, Sports and Culture has always been, well, it's a need-led service. And we agree that it should be based on need. But our argument is that, I from my experience and the experience of other people and the evidence we've collected, is actually that they're not meeting needs. And one of the fundamental barriers could be, you know, the lack of training. And this is not, you know, we are supporting teachers. We know that this is not about the teachers. It's about, you know, higher up in terms of providing the resources, the funding, the support, the assessments, the methods. Because we've also found out from the Timwell report, when you look at the appendix, it's quite far at the back, that there is no consistency in terms of what schools are using in terms of assessments and methods in supporting that. It's very different, and a child shouldn't be getting different support depending on what school they go to. It's kind of like a postcode lottery at the moment.
And as a teacher, that must be really quite frustrating, knowing that you want to give that child, you want to give all the children in your classroom the same, you know, the same opportunities and the same knowledge at the end of the day. So what would your message be then? We're looking ahead to Timwell later this month, to people who are unaware of this response to this report. What do you want people on the Isle of Man to do?
Okay, well, I suppose there's addressed to two population groups here. We've got the public, but we've also got Timwell members. So we need Timwell members to actually ask the question whether the amendments actually meet the intended purpose of the original report, and what the amendments will actually, how the amendments change the meaning completely. In particular to the recommendation that has been rejected. Which perhaps we can go into, actually, because I think that's quite an important rejection. But for the public, the Timwells are not going to vote in favour of these recommendations if they are under the impression that this is not of public interest. And so the public need to get behind this and contact, if it's important to them, then they need to contact their local MHK and explain to them that that this is really important to them, and that they want them to vote in favour of these recommendations, that they believe it's important, and that it will make a positive, meaningful impact for children with dyslexia and other neurodiverse conditions. And also, it's important to bear in mind that any intervention that is offered for neurodiverse people, actually, a byproduct of that is that it actually impacts positively on all people as well. So we need the public to get behind this and contact their local MHK. And, you know, if they agree with this, if they want the votes to go to be in favour, to let the MHKs know.
A lot of people have been at this for quite a long time. And like I was saying, we've got Joyce Munro going back to 2012. If that would have been implemented then, we wouldn't be where we are now. If this goes through as it stands, this doesn't mean this is going to go away. It's just because it's going to mean the campaign is going to keep going on and on. And we might not be the ones that are campaigning for it, but there's going to be another generation of parents whose kids are going to go to school and thinking they're not getting an education. And we've got an opportunity now. We've never had such an opportunity as what it is now because of these recommendations, because this select committee have really delved into it. So we're asking the MHKs to read this report, read the recommendations, and we need them to think, are these recommendations, the rejected and the amendments from the Council of Ministers, is that what they really want to support? Because this is our one big chance that we've been waiting for years, and it's not going to go away, this issue.
And also, it's sort of the politicians, are they kicking the can down the road? Because they're they have their places for 5 years, and then a vote comes and they may be out. So they're worried about what happens in those 5 years. But what happens to those children when they're leaving school? You know, have we done them a disservice in the type of education we've given them? The politicians keep talking about a homegrown workforce. Well, you'd have a lot more people being successful in that homegrown workforce if you give them the correct training and teaching while they're young.
Of course, we're talking about the current administration and the current crop of MHKs. And they'll be out come September, or, well, at least some of them. And, you know, there might be some coming back in. So, like you were saying there, it's your one big chance. Do you feel it is super time critical right now?
I think it is super time critical, because this is, if we look back and see what this administration has done in the last 5 years, there's a lot of comments saying that they haven't done anything. This is one big thing. This is one big legacy that this government could leave if they grab this by the horns and they ran with all these recommendations. They could say that they've made a big improvement to a lot of children's lives and a lot of families in the education system. Decide not to, it just typifies what they've done for the last 5 years. They've done nothing.
And I think it's important to reiterate to the public that this is a rare opportunity. This hasn't happened before, where a select committee specific to dyslexia and dyspraxia and dysgraphia and dyscalculia, it hasn't been done before. And the investigation has been huge in terms of all the evidence collecting. When I started this, I think it was back in 2019, I started doing my research. I submitted my first petition in 2020. There was no data at all. I had to use national data and global data to justify why it was needed. Now we can use local data. And so we have the evidence now, and they've done all the investigations and they've come up with these 12 recommendations. It's significant. And I just think it's such a rare opportunity, and we need to grasp that and everyone get on board with this.
And when Julia started this in 2020, when your first petition, children who are 4 years old and starting school are now 10 and just about to start secondary school. And there have been a lot of families saying that it's a really hard transition to secondary. They then get lost in secondary. And it's that 6 years. For those children, it's been really important. We've missed them. And it's not fair. It's just not fair.
As adults, 5 years can fly by, can't it?
Absolutely.
But when you're that age, like you say, it's your entire primary school. It could be your entire secondary school. So that's a good point. It hones it down, doesn't it? And Julie, you mentioned about the specific recommendation we're talking about, which had been rejected, recommendation 10, that Tim Wald is of the opinion that the Department of Education, Sport and Culture should exist and fund a centralised workforce of specialist dyslexia teachers to work across primary and secondary schools and report back to Tim Wald on progress by December this year. The department has rejected that recommendation. It says the proposal to establish a centralised workforce of specialist dyslexia teachers is not supported by current evidence-based research or best practice. So drill down into that. What do you make of that?
Well, I can't understand how they can say it's not evidence-based to have a centralised workforce, because the Rose Report 2009, I think it's dated, advocates strongly for dyslexia specialists to work in school. There's many reports that advocate for dyslexia specialists, and the British Dyslexia Association, they say in order for a school to be marked with a quality marker means that a school has got an environment that's inclusive and effective for dyslexic pupils. In order to be awarded with that quality marker, one of the criteria is a school must have a dyslexia specialist. And Timwald have not said that every single school needs to have a dyslexia specialist. What they're saying is there should be a centralised workforce to work within schools, between schools. And if you have that method, it's also going to help with other recommendations of upskilling the workforce in general, because you could then provide cost-effective in-house training, which essentially then would be really cost-effective. And sometimes, you know, if teachers are, obviously they'll be having their CPD, but if they are seeing difficulties that are persisting despite their assessments and interventions, it then gives them someone to go to ask for more help. So we're not saying that it's kind of contradicting the teacher role, it's just complementing it. And, you know, the Rose Report, the British Dyslexia Association, there'll be many reports that we can, in fact, we've referenced here that I have in front of me that advocate that it is best practice. So I think the Department of Education, Sports and Culture, if they're saying it's not best practice and inappropriate, they need to quote their references. Where are they getting that from?
I think you've got any other industry that can identify that there's a need and you need that specialist person to be there, they would automatically be there, whether you've been up at the college, whether you're talking about an electrician or a plumber. If they've got something that needs a specialist person to give advice to the rest of the team that are working in that environment, they've got to be qualified. So for us not to have Sencos that are qualified, to me, that's absolute madness. And that is the fundamental thing that we're talking about here, is that we've recognised that the recommendations from the select committee are saying that we have got an issue here that does need to be sorted out, and they give their recommendations to sort out the issues. And now we've got the situation now where they're saying, well, we don't need these specialists, and we'll just muddle along and we'll just carry on doing what we've always done.
And Daphne Kane mentions in her foreword that we need high quality teaching, but how can it be high quality teaching if those teachers aren't given the opportunity to do the dyslexia training? So they're getting autism training and ADHD training. Are they getting the same amount of dyslexia training so that they can, give that high quality teaching that the children need?
Well, we have been to the Department of Education, Sport and Culture to ask if we can get the Minister's response on this, and we will keep pushing on that and put your comments to the department. But what would be your final message then to the Minister in respect of this?
Well, the department's model, I think, depends on three things being true. So one, it depends that teachers can identify persistent patterns of difficulty. So teachers have to be able to identify it. Then teachers need to understand what those difficulties mean. And teachers need to know how to adapt teaching and provide appropriate interventions. But if the teacher can't do any one of those things, then they're not able to meet their needs. And we know that they're not getting adequate training because the report in 2012 said that they're not. And therefore, something needs to change.
From my point of view, is I think all the MHKs really need to do read this report and the recommendations that came from the select committee, and then they've got to decide who on balance that they're going to run with. And this is going to come up in September, when they're going to be knocking on doors. This is certainly going to be there, because, you know, it's going to be high on the agenda amongst a lot of other issues that they've got. You know, we've only got to look at the health, we've only got to look at the housing crisis. Are we going to put education in the same system as well? This is their one opportunity that they can do something really brave, really good, and really do something for the population of the Isle of Man. Or they can kick the can down the road and they'll pay for it on the doorstep in September.
And overall, it's the model they're giving is a needs-based approach. So any child's needs are going to be met through the teaching. But if you don't know how to help a dyslexic because you haven't had the professional development offered to you, or it's not mandatory, then how do you help those children?
Well, thank you all for coming in and speaking to us this afternoon. We'll have to wrap up, but just want to say we appreciate it, and we'll look ahead to Timwald in June. But thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Education Minister declined to comment ahead of this month's Tynwald sitting so as not to prejudice or undermine the debate.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.